Joining me now, Paul Teller, regular on the John Frederick Show every Monday, 9:30, and Rabbi Yankov Macon, who is the vice president now, the vice president of the Jewish Coalition for Values. Rabbi, I'm going to start with you. Netanyahu coming to the White House today. He's probably there now. Meeting going on, press conference 2:30. What do you expect out of this meeting, Rabbi?
Well, I think there's going to be two pieces to this, because obviously one is going to have to do with tariffs and getting Israel back, you know, tariff free. Israel eliminated all tariffs on the very few products where they still had tariffs on American goods. Now they don't. So that's the first topic. But obviously they have to talk about the elimination of Hamas, the continuing efforts to eliminate it, and the growing realization, even among the Trump's political opponents, that it's time to get rid of Hamas, the declining support in the Senate for Sanders' efforts to block arms sales to Israel, which is a really good sign. We could be turning back the clock on anti-Semitism in America, which would be a huge benefit to all Americans, not just its Jews.
Paul, what do you think?
Paul 100% agree. Good morning, as always. Good to be with you guys. Yeah, I agree with all of that. I'd imagine also on the list is, I'd imagine the Prime Minister is going to remind the President that Israel is not going to allow aid going into Gaza. You know, there's rumors that that's reversing, but from what I'm told, that's not true. They realize that any of that aid goes right to the hands of terrorists or those who would help the terrorists. I would also imagine you'd remind them, hey, by the way, there's still hostages in there that we need to be talking about that American media is hardly covering, including, I think, at least one American, maybe more. The rabbi can correct me on that. Like you were just saying, attacks from Hamas are still coming. There were some that came over the weekend, that were thwarted over the weekend. There were riots in Judea and Samaria. In other words, Israel's got a lot of stuff going on still, and even if it's out of the media, it doesn't mean there's not a lot there. So I imagine all that comes up, as well as, like you said, the anti-Semitism on college campuses. The president will probably be proud to say, just today I think they announced $500 million cut from Brown University and others as well that were announced last week. So a lot on a very full agenda.
Iran. Tell me about Iran. How's that playing today?
Yeah,
Rabbi.
I think this.
Or Paul.
Oh, sorry. No, either way.
Paul.
Go ahead.
Paul.
I'm good with Paul.
all right. I was going to say, my apologies. That obviously will very much be on the list. I think just kind of continued reassurances that Netanyahu will seek from the president that if Israel has to do what it has to do, i.e. direct attack Iran, that the United States would at minimum just kind of hang back, give it verbal support, but maybe even, help it logistically and certainly with intelligence and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's no question that that's on the agenda because Iran keeps upping its threats against Israel. It's not going away. It's not going away through its proxies or directly. So, yeah, absolutely.
What about the threat that President Trump made? If they keep backing the Houthis, bombs will fly. I'm paraphrasing it, but he said there's going to be hell to pay. Also, Israel has talked about taking out their nuclear reactor farms. What is your reaction to that,
Rabbi? I was thinking about that. I don't think that the conversation is only going to talk about what Israel can do with American support. I think there's going to be a decent part of that conversation regarding what America is thinking of doing, what Trump is thinking of doing himself, direct military involvement with Iran. Because Iran represents a clear and present danger, not just to the stability of that region, but really, I mean, if they get a hold of nuclear weapons, the entire world is under threat. We talked about this before, how the Iranians actually believe they might go to heaven and enjoy life a lot better if they start a nuclear war. This is not somebody you want to trust with nuclear weapons. Everybody else who has them understands that dying is a bad thing. And this is a critical difference between radical Islamic theology and basically everybody else. The Iranians actually do not believe that causing mass death and destruction to their own people is necessarily a bad thing. That's what makes them having nuclear weapons such a so much more dangerous than anybody else having them.
Paul, you look at the situation right now in Gaza, and I asked, I had earlier on Ruthie Bloom, who was a senior advisor to Benjamin Netanyahu about a 5-year period. And I just asked her, and I'm going to ask you guys the same question. I mean, what's the end game here? I mean, either you're going to wipe them out totally, just go down there and level the whole thing, or not. Like, there's no middle ground here. When they want to kill you, what is the end game? What is Netanyahu's end game?
No, that's right. Well, look, I think some of it is what you just suggested, you know, total eradication. But, you know, I think there could also be something like what happened in World War II, where we didn't kill every Japanese person, didn't kill every German person or every Italian, that kind of thing. You just kind of sap their will so that the ones that are remaining just kind of cry uncle and say, okay, I get it. Like, stop, please. And at that point, God willing, you could proceed with some sort of attempt at peace, which, again, of course, has to be overseen and run by Israel in Gaza. It can no longer be like, hey, we'll trust you, Palestinians. I know you screwed us last time, but, you know, we'll trust you this time. It obviously can't be that ever again, at least in the, you know, foreseeable.
So there's
decades.
No two-state solution, right? That's out the window.
Correct.
That's long gone.
Right.
Everybody's,
yeah, that's,
I mean,
gone.
That was Jared Kushner's vision, two-state, invest, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in Gaza's KSA and UAE. That's like a pipe dream. That's not going to happen. So
there was reason. I think that was one of those cases where the Trump administration was looking at the end game to that, and they were trying to prove a point. They gave the Palestinian Authority an impossibly generous offer, impossibly generous deal, and said, you've got 4 years to take this deal. And of course, because it was an actual peace deal, the Palestinian Authority did not take it. And so I don't know how much Jared Kushner actually thought that there was any chance that would actually happen, and how much he was doing it to kind of prove there is no deal you can give the Palestinian Authority that's going to lead to peace. They are like the Hamas, and Hamas is merely more explicit about it. The goal is not to create a state, it's to destroy a state. It's to destroy the refuge for persecuted Jews. That's the end game for them. And that's why Hamas needs to be completely eradicated. And Gaza either has to be denazified, you teach them decency, you teach them that the Israelis are not evil incarnate. There's a reason why the Israelis are treating your babies in their hospitals, and it's because they're actually nice people. Or they have to move. There's really the two alternatives.
So why don't they just say, why don't they just do that? I think everybody is just, you know, wondering what, because it's like, it's like bomb half. It's like when MacArthur told, when Truman told MacArthur, we'll bomb half the bridge. He said, how am I going to bomb half a bridge? Either bomb or you don't. It's kind of like, reminds me of that in Korea when Truman ended up firing him. It's like bomb, kind of take him out, but don't take him out, but kind of take him out. I mean, eradication. I mean, the only end game here is you completely wipe them out, and then you come in and take it over, and then those of Palestinian descent that stay there, well, they have to live under Israeli rules, like they're living in Montana in the U.S. You got to live by the rules because, like, that's your country. I don't see any other way to do this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wonder if there it could be, and frankly, we can ask Jared Kushner this, but maybe he's even thinking of some sort of Abraham Accords-like solution. Obviously, it would be slightly different because the countries in the Abraham Accords were not attacking Israel and killing people, but something similar in the sense of, like, you know, getting investors in there. And I know folks sort of make fun of President Trump when he was talking about hotels along the Mediterranean in Gaza, but you know what? Maybe there's something to that. Like, where if it's under, you know, Israeli control, to get investment in there and peace through economic growth. I mean, I wonder if there's some element of that that could at least be part of the solution. But you're right, it's got to be a military one first.
I'm actually getting to disagree with Paul for once. Like, it's, you know, like every week we come on together and we're always like, oh, wow, this, you know, like everything he said is just brilliant. And then we go on. This time I actually argue with the idea that economic development is going to be enough to reverse the hate that has been inculcated. You know, again, it's about the American tendency to underestimate religious fervor and what it does.
Thank you. That is exactly it. That you nailed it. We don't get it. Like, we don't exist in this world. And we just don't get it. I don't care
yeah,
if you're pro-Jew,
not pro-Jew, pro-Israel. Rather die and starve. You know,
exactly.
Look, Hamas
we just
had
don't get
the
it.
Opportunity. Economic development, go back to 2005. The Gazans were given that. You want to, not only was every last Jew ethnically cleansed out of Gaza, but they left behind the schools. They left behind the greenhouses that they were using to produce hydroponic vegetables that were feeding not only Israel, but they were exporting them internationally. The Gazans could have taken over those businesses and run them. Instead, what the Gazans did was they said, oh, those things were built by Jews, and destroyed them. They razed them to the ground. And since 2007, when Hamas took over, what happened from then on is that instead of using concrete that they were being sent to build schools, to build hospitals, to build mosques, they were building terror tunnels. They were building the Hamas-Gazan underground, which is longer, apparently, than the London underground. I mean, and they, of course, they were building them under civilian neighborhoods so that any attempt to stop Hamas results in civilian casualties. Hamas did this as a deliberate tactic. They're doing it because they know the average Gazan civilian was ready to give their life for Gaza. Now we're seeing the protests beginning. There's the beginning of a reversal of that, that Hamas is disgusting, Hamas is terrorists. The Gazans are actually realizing it. That's where the best hope lies. Not the economic development alone, but the idea that Hamas is repugnant, Hamas was out to murder every Israeli baby, we've got to do something different now.
Well, Paul, you've got to rebut that.
No, I mean, the truth is, I agree in the sense that I do think I would proceed as we did in World War II, sap their will first through military means. And what's left once they surrender, that's a word we keep using here, still not used very much in the media for some reason. Once they surrender, then you can start talking economic development and stuff like that with the remaining folks whose will have been sapped. That's all I meant.
I think what the rabbi's saying, and it was the same thing that Ruthie Bloom said at the 7 o'clock hour, is that because I mentioned the word, unconditional surrender, like that's what we wanted from Japan and Germany. I mean, both of the, especially Germany, multiple times at the end, tried to negotiate a peace. We wouldn't do it. We wanted unconditional surrender. Same thing with the Japanese, wanted unconditional surrender. Well, getting unconditional surrender, you got to drop atom bombs, or you got to turn Hamburg into basically an incinerator and burn the entire population to death. That's like what we did. I mean, it is what it is. This is just history. That's how you get unconditional surrender. Yeah. Well, Ruthie's point was they're never going to surrender because they're religious fanatics that think surrender, they're not going to go to the afterlife, and they're martyrs. So they don't want to surrender. They want to just kill Jews. So I don't know how you get out of this.
Well, that's the Western problem, is that, they're such absolutists, they're such religious radicals, therefore we have to have a ceasefire. A ceasefire is an opportunity for them to regroup and rearm. There have been countless ceasefires between 2005 and now, and every single time Hamas uses it as an opportunity to arm and get ready for the next round. And that's what we saw building up to October 7. You can't have that again. You have to have absolute, unconditional white flag of surrender. Because the alternative is they will continue working towards genocide. So anybody who calls for a ceasefire is actually calling for continued progress on genocide. It's not actually a moral position. The moral position, the only moral position, is the white flag of surrender. And if they all want to die in the meantime, that's too bad. But that's all on you. I don't have a problem with this war continuing until they surrender, even if the surrender means that there's one Gazan left. It's very sad, but that's up to them. They have to make the decision that they would rather live and live in peace than die for war. It's up to them.
Yep.
I think they've already made that decision. They don't want peace. If they wanted peace, they'd have had peace. I mean, we had a ceasefire. They wouldn't release the hostages. Trump got pissed. I mean, they break every deal they make. So I'm just not like, I don't know where this is going. Like when you look at when you look at other conflicts, I mean, you look at the Russian-Ukraine conflict. This is a non-religious conflict. This is over land, right? This is what wars have been fought over since the beginning of time. Land. Everybody gets that, right? Russia wants their land back, whatever it is. And so they're fighting. And, you know, eventually, if Ukraine can't field an army and Russia grinds them out, they're going to have to surrender when Kiev falls, right? I mean, that's kind of the way wars go. But in this war, there's no end game. I keep asking, they say, well, they have to surrender. Well, they're not going to surrender. And then you can't wipe everybody out because what were they saying? For every one Hamas fighter, you have to kill 150 innocent Palestinians. Nobody wants to see that. I don't want to see it. Right? I don't want to see innocent people die to that extent.
Yeah.
So this is, boy, if there was ever a Rubik's Cube, I don't know what the answer is here, guys.
I don't think it's true that you need it. Certainly is not 150 to one. It's actually much more like the Hamas terrorists are now admitting that all their death statistics were totally made up, and 70% of the casualties are fighting age males. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, that doesn't necessarily mean that all the fighting age males were participants in Hamas, but neither is it true. I mean, obviously, you have people beyond fighting age, like Yahya Sinwar, who needed to be eliminated, and there were women participating in the fighting, too. So, you know, it's really up to them, you know, John. They've got to decide that it's time to surrender and live in peace. If the only alternative to that is to neutralize them all, if they're all, every single terrorist needs to be neutralized or surrender. It really does work that way, and it's very sad.
You guys, we're out of time. Great discussion as always. I look forward to seeing what Prime Minister Netanyahu has to say.
Next week is Passover. We're going to talk about when we're going to do this next week. Talk to you.
Okay, yes. Next week is Passover. We do have to talk about it. Get with Christine, find out the best date for you guys, religious-wise. You can follow Paul Teller, @PTeller. And, of course, Rabbi Yaakov Menken is at the Jewish Coalition, the Coalition of Jewish Values.
CJ Values. Coalition for Jewish Values. CJ Values and Y Menken. That's how to find me.
All right.